Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist with a special interview for you with mystic and esoteric researcher, Gigi Young. Gigi's remarkable psychic insights have contributed greatly to the X series, and she's been ahead of the curve when looking at the rise of AI, UFOs, and interdimensional entities for over a decade. Gigi now sees a dangerous trend rising with the elite's current obsession with the planet Mars.
So we have to understand that there is this synthetic... There's synthetic humanoid beings that want to be reintegrated into society because they've destroyed themselves. And they're simultaneously introducing that path of destruction to us because that's how they bind back in.
Please join us now. We might want to talk about what real channeling is, because even the Casey stuff is channeling. The first book on Casey talked about how he tuned in like a channel, like a television channel, and that's where they got the whole term about channeling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's really actually, that's cool.
It is. It's, I was reading, there's a guy they call the Poughkeepsie Seer, 1850s, and he's doing all the same stuff. He's channeling in trance. And he's got this whole thing going on. So obviously, and he came through with some remarkable work. He's cited by Steiner as an early attempt, like pre-Blavatsky attempt for the schools. And the problem that comes about is they get hooked on the afterlife aspect being exactly like this. So they're like, oh, I can see my grandfather when I go over into the Summerland. And, so the Poughkeepsie Seer, you know, he keeps going into this Summerland thing. And they're like, there's all this other esoteric stuff you're supposed to go after. And he's just after this after death part. You know, now there's, that's good channeling. That's not even like chicanery or anything. But still, you have to watch it when you get up at that level about the information that you're paying attention to.
You do. And I think something that's not really talked about enough with channeling is that it takes sacrifice. And nobody wants to hear this. Nobody wants to hear that. In order to get into the higher levels where you actually can sense what the world wants and what the world needs, and I mean like really what it needs, not what lower needs. You know, like remove the mystery of death so that I can feel better. But what the world genuinely needs moving forward in the next couple hundred years, in order to get that level, you have to sacrifice in your life. And it's not an easy path. And so if you don't do that, you can absolutely pop into the lower astral plane and get some information and even be a medium and whatever. There's lower level channeling. There absolutely is. Some of it's pretty great and some of it's not so great. But that's pretty much where it is. It's pretty much all about sacrificing. The higher you want to go, the more you have to sacrifice your ego, your personal desires, and click into something bigger than yourself, which is how you get that kind of leadership quality to a psychic, because not every psychic is going to be a leader, right?
Yes. So. Exactly. Well, it's a pretty unique role. And we've seen, you know, in a number of tribes, when the shaman would be somebody, they would elect to engage with this fantasy, in a sense, to go out of his body and then obtain the information they need and come back. So they would have to kind of like send him on his journey and then get him back.
Yeah.
So they understood.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we look back at the shamanism that used to take place, whether it be in South America or, you know, you've talked about the Sami shamanism in the north or even Celtic, they knew what they were doing, and they actually had a lot of wisdom we could use now. In truth, we've really moved far away from, I think, understanding psychic ability in society and training psychics and just knowing what it is. And I think society's really suffered and really is at a deficit because of that.
Well, they tried, they certainly tried to break through the psychic aspect, I think. Some of the schools did.
Oh, yes,
and,
they did.
Yeah. I think of Dionne Fortune and some of her work describing psychic self-defense and things, trying to give us that hint. And then I think of all the mediums and things. So we've had these waves at times, you know, and then always with the waves, you had what appeared to be fraud on top of it, you know, the false mediums using lights and contraptions and things. And yet a lot of that stuff is also contrived in a way to make it look bad. So there's a stage during Theosophy where she, where Blavatsky and Olcott actually go to places like Philadelphia and New York, and they're trying to promote the mediumship aspect and say, no, it's not, you know, this is not a sideshow, but at the same time, you have to be careful with it. So it's a hard thing to just introduce on a culture.
Yeah. And I mean, really, you know, as culture is evolving, it's been hard in the last, you know, 100 years, because we are now in this age where mind is really developed. And so we're not really going to probably accept psychic ability unless we can understand it in the sense of science, you know, which is also what the schools are bringing forward, was a spiritual science. And so that's the way that we will understand it moving forward, is understanding what consciousness is and understanding spiritual things in a more objective way. And that's really where we're moving to. But obviously, that's really hard to teach, which is also why maybe we, you know, with everything kind of piling on, it's really hard to teach that, because think about how well you have to know something. You know, it's not just beliefs and stories and myths anymore. It's like we have to actually really understand what's going on here. So.
Right. Well, this is interesting, because you've been doing it for so long, and you've been able to kind of go through the different stages of it. You've also seen kind of some of the fluffier versions of it in the public. And so, like, how would you say, like, how would you discover it? What kind of advice would you give for somebody to discovering the kind of psychic reality?
I would say that the first thing that you have to know is that it's already in you. It's not something that you even have to, like, go out and grab, or it's not really something that you have to develop. It's something that, with the right, if you can build up the right energy in your body and really nourish yourself with the right wisdom, it will just unfold within you. It's already within you. And if you follow your heart and those impulses within your heart, it will get stronger and stronger and stronger. It sounds really sentimental, but it's actually the place of intuition. So it's already within you. All you have to do is trust it and build it up, and know that if you create the right conditions within your mind and also within your body, it will just unfold. That's how intricately laced with the cosmos we are.
So it's like you have a latent ability, and then it becomes manifested.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it will manifest at the exact ratio that you can heal yourself. And one of the reasons why people will start to develop psychically and then back off is because psychic ability is just permeability, what it is. It's emotional permeability and mental permeability, where you're just becoming more soft and you're just becoming more perceptive, and you're getting rid of all of those shells you're putting around yourself, all those walls you build around yourself. And so psychic ability is healing. And you will develop psychically to the exact degree that you can heal in your life. And then the second factor is that your range of psychic ability in your life is also going to be dependent on your past lives. So there's also a level of this that is building on every life that you have. So,
do you think it's a mistake to leave out the reincarnation part when you're doing this?
I do. I think it is a mistake. I understand why it could be left out. Like, I understand why people kind of left it out in the past, sort of, to get people to focus in on now, in the present. But I think when people leave out reincarnation, they're leaving out the bigger picture. And I think it becomes too materialist. It's just too short, too small, and too dense. And we need to be able to maintain that ability to see the big picture, whether it be in our lives or whether it be in, as we move into a cosmic era, cosmic consciousness or a space-faring society, we also need to have the big picture of seeing the planetary spheres and the different lives of the Earth and the different incarnations of the Earth. So it's not just the reincarnation of ourselves. And I know this is getting very esoteric, but we have to talk about this because we are moving into a space-faring age. It's also the different incarnations of the planet and the spirit of the Earth and things like that. So we have to see things as a chain of development. Ourselves, the planet, everything has to become a chain or phases of development. And that's how we're really going to understand ourselves and what's going on.
So, for example, when you reincarnate from Earth and go into the planetary systems, you inhabit a kind of body in the different planetary systems.
Yes, you inhabit a different you inhabit a different form. And while you're doing that, the cosmos is also progressing forward. And so the cosmos is changing, the Earth is changing from when you were last on it, and everything's kind of changing around you, and you're moving through the cosmos as everything's changing and evolving and growing, and you're playing your little part in that. And that's the beauty of our spiritual life, our cosmic spiritual life. And there are certain levels of the cosmos that we can really only access once we've achieved a certain level of initiation. And there's also levels of the cosmos where we remain trapped in, thinking about like the eighth sphere and stuff like that, where if we cannot achieve a certain level of union within ourselves, we get kind of held back. And that's also part of reincarnation too, is understanding the pattern of reincarnation based on how integrated you are as an individual or how fragmented you are as an individual.
Absolutely. You know, this makes me think about what the different bodies might be about. So, for example, if someone leaves Earth and they go and they inhabit a Venus body for that realm, you know, like how would we describe the bodies? Because you've been emphasizing Mars a lot in your own work, and you're identifying where there are groups now, like the Elon Musk type thing, or the military version of space, where they have an overemphasis on Mars. And this gets back to maybe an ancient worship system that is part of that kind of secret society piece hanging in the background there on the political spectrum.
Oh, 100%. If we peel back the layers of secret societies, we'll find out that there's a very intricate cosmology that they have. And this is outside of like religion and outside of the average person's kind of understanding. And one of the things that I've realized is that this is something that's really not spoken about. It's not talked about. I would say it's really held close to their chest because of how important it is. But Mars is actually a huge religious planet for them. It is a future planet for them. They see it as somewhere where they can return to. They believe, many of these elite groups, they actually believe that they came from Mars, that humanity came from Mars, and that part of their life purpose is to return to Mars. And so we see Wernher von Braun writing this book called Project Mars.
Right.
Why are we doing that? And then you look at the
book. Getting a little obvious, right?
Right. And then you look at, and he's done all the calculations, right?
Yeah.
And then he's mentioning, I think, in that book or a complimentary book, he's talking about Elon.
There's no question. He's predicting it outright.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this is a ritual. This is a ritual. And so everybody's sitting back and cheering like, oh, we're going to be this space-faring society. How amazing. But we have to understand that going to Mars and the development, the space development of NASA, of all of these private space programs. This is a religion.
Right.
That's what this is. And Mars is a huge part of that. And a lot of it is due to certain events that occurred during Atlantis and the overlapping of certain higher spheres of life over the planet at certain times where certain beings did migrate here. We'd call them maybe the fallen angels or whatever. But it's something that they hold very close to their chest because I believe that they want to spring it on us at the very last minute and tell us what our origin story is and connect it to Mars. And so it's a very long conversation probably.
No, I think this is fantastic actually, because they're making such a big piece of it. We know with the space program, they stopped going to the moon in 1972. A lot of people challenge whether they even went, but for the sake of argument, for sure, you know, I think they went. That period, 50 years of hanging out between 72 and we're going to be 2022, they're going to the moon in 2024, which is something that Mike Pence set up under Trump with the Space Force and the Space Council. That's 52 years. So what do you do with 52 years of development that's paid for by the public but completely out of sight and not mentioned in any newspaper except for, well, here's a shuttle launch and usually those things are blowing up. I mean, obviously, they're doing something totally different.
Exactly. And if we factor in that they're, if we can understand what their esoteric, spiritual, religious belief system is, then we can understand them. Right. Then we can understand what's going on. And I mean, what is going on with the injections? All of this is part of a religious belief. An esoteric belief system, all of this, it's part of that.
But don't you know it's just science, Gigi? False science.
They believe, this is the thing, science has become their religion.
Yeah.
And they now, because it's like, you know how we were just saying, you know, you have Rudolf Steiner coming in and doing the heavy lifting and saying, you know, we're going to have mysticism and spirituality move into a science. But then you have this group over here that's making it weird and that's turning it around and that's kind of inverting it and making and certainly making it about science, but to a weird degree. It's like somebody has the information of the mystery schools, but has no idea how to actually work with the energy or work with beings or whatever it is. That's basically what it looks like, because it's an inversion of what it's meant to be.
So it's an attempt to kind of like grab humanity's attention and get them all on board with a kind of pseudo spirituality based around a belief system in their discoveries. And somewhere in those discoveries, they're going to arrange for our origins to have been picked up in ancient Mars. There's going to be ancient Martian ruins, and that's going to prove it for sure. We come from Mars, and therefore this whole bloodline here on Earth that relates to that, those are the real kings and rulers.
I wouldn't be surprised. From what I've seen in my own work and what I've seen them actually release, like I, you know, just saw an episode of Ancient Aliens where they basically said that. They basically said, you know, our origins are on Mars and we're returning there.
Right.
And they've said that various different times. And I mean, they just released the Mars rover. And in the article for the, I believe it was the Sun, they said, searching for our ancient origins, searching for life, you know, so this is what is being prepared. And a lot of people will look at that and they'll say, well, this is science and this isn't spirituality. This isn't esoterica. This is just science, and science is safe. Science is objective, and science, it's just not true. This is a ritual, and science can just be a very advanced and precise form of ritual and the occult. And, you know, if they were to come forward and convince humanity that either human origins are on Mars, or that their particular origins are on Mars, so they're these Anunnaki gods, that would completely change human consciousness. Because suddenly humanity would be adding this truth to themselves that's not true, and it would affect your trajectory. It would affect your belief about yourself and therefore your own development spiritually. So it's very dangerous to give someone the wrong origin story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Do you think that, well, they've rolled out the Anunnaki thing before. They had the whole trip with, oh, the Sumerians, you know, they came down and Anunnaki tooled with them a little bit, monkeyed with their DNA, made them mine gold, and then they left. And, you know, that whole story relates to that. They hammered away on that, on the alternative side, trying to get it as like a belief system. And there's no question, a lot of people actually do believe that. But, and there are strains of truth in it, of course, because the Anunnaki visited the Sumerians, and there maybe it was a huge emphasis around gold. But what's happening, it seems like even that research was heavily manipulated by the Rockefellers sponsoring Zechariah Sitchin, for example. So there is this thread in there where they want to control that, just with the early origins. Like Carnegie was really obsessed with Egyptian mysticism, obsessed with dinosaurs. So they want access, Gigi, to that early part of the story, because somehow the way that it sits now, they feel like they can alter it, and they can somehow use that story as a new building block in consciousness. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. And they're also, the Smithsonian also takes all the skeletons and ushers them away, and they try to keep humanity on a very specific idea about who we are.
Right.
But ultimately, in my opinion, what we're seeing is that there was a group of, you call them interdimensional beings, you could call them future humans, whatever you want. But there's a group of individuals that did come here while humanity was already developed. And they did try to genetically modify humanity. Did they create humanity? No, of course not. You know, if we look at the work of the mystery schools, we know that humanity was formed in the exact image of the cosmos by the cosmic impulse itself, moving down in density further and further until we take a physical form. So that's a divine human. But what this origin story is an obsession with hybridization. And it will eventually lead to telling humanity that human beings are actually the result of massive hybridization from interdimensional beings. So humanity is not divine. Humanity is actually more like a child. And what we are is the result of just hybridization after hybridization after hybridization from these ET parent beings.
Right.
And so right away, that takes away our divine heritage. That takes away a huge part of ourself. It takes away our inner Christ. It takes away our ability to be sovereign. And it's sort of like we have this huge tyrannical government that's coming in and trying to be our parent and trying to tell us what to do every day and, you know, just closing in on us. And then this is also the same thing that's going to happen in the spiritual or religious scene, where we're going to get these parents that come in that are ETs or interdimensionals eventually. And they're going to say, you know, the missing link is basically aliens. And these aliens are gods, or these aliens are our parents. And really, with the DNA issue or the missing link issue, we actually will let go of some of our qualities or some of our DNA, if you will, as we move down in density, because we can't take it all with us. We can't take all of our abilities with us and all of our magnificence with us. We take a piece of it when we come into this 3D life. And then we work and we work and we work through integration and through discipline and through spirituality to awaken our DNA. So the reason why we're limited here is not because we're limited or that we're great. It's not because of an external being or an alien. It is because of the very structure of the cosmos and how life moves through it as we gain and lose aspects of ourself through the just cosmic rhythms of life, through the natural evolution. It's how we become who we are, is we lose things and we gain them. And we do that through transmutation. So, you know, the natural process of transmutation of having pain and having trauma and then overcoming it, the awakening of the Kundalini, that's how we light up. And so this is very dangerous. It's in a lot of different channeling circles. A lot of popular YouTubers are teaching that, you know, the human being is all a result of hybridization. This is a lower astral false paradigm, and it is very dangerous to our consciousness to believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting how well devised it is, because people always want to know about hybrids and things of this nature. So it kind of catches our attention on the imagination side.
It's true, because there are periods of time where there has been meddling on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I certainly wouldn't say that we haven't been meddled with. The issue is that our origins is not by these beings. Our origins are divine. These beings came after we were already formed. So this is, and that's the important thing. It's not that hybridization doesn't exist. It's that we don't evolve through that. And it's not how we began. We shouldn't be marking that as our origin, because we are much greater than that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and what's interesting is you talk about kind of a moral relativism that comes out of this, which is, you know, we come out of a spiritual tradition, and that spiritual tradition is locked in with, you know, stages of development, the school of the prophets, and things of this nature. And there's all sorts of battles over religion and everything else. This relativism thing is interesting, because it's like, well, actually, you know, since you're just a hybrid, you don't really have to worry so much, you know, like, hey, everything's actually all right, because you're actually just a hybrid, and forget about all these things that you've learned in terms of spiritual moral precepts, because that was done from a level of not knowing this great thing about, hey, you're just plugged in to this, you know, other pathway in the past. And so therefore, now that you know that, you're a different thing. You don't know anything. There's no Ten Commandments, for example. Just forget about it.
Oh, they can get rid of anything. They can get rid of anything, and I'm sure they would.
Yeah. But
yeah, the moral relativism is a massive part of this. It basically leads to Luciferianism.
Yes.
Which basically feeds the harmonic paradigm. So, yeah, the other thing to intuitive development or to human development is to understand that the virtues or the morals, they're not about sticking your nose up at people or being better than people or virtue signaling. What they do is, if you live by the virtues and if you have a moral code, it actually allows you to progress in life, and it actually allows your energetic body to align with Christ consciousness. It makes your life easier, and it actually is what progresses your soul. So when you lose these things and you start to only pursue pleasure, what feels good, or escape pain, suddenly your soul begins to degrade very quickly. And if there's an entity that wants to, I'd say, eat your soul or consume your energy or attach to you, they're going to want to introduce a lot of Luciferianism, a lot of moral relativity to your life, because they're going to want to get you to separate from that sovereign Christ energy.
That's so interesting. I want to follow up on this. I want to pull in the Emilius part coming out of the Casey readings. In Casey's story, his cosmology is Emilius shows up 200,000 BC and he splits into male and female. So that after that, instead of being in one unisex body, all the souls are now two sides that complement each other. And he is a perfected body. So he often terms it Emilius as Adam.
Okay.
Whereas the versions that are there are what he often refers to as thought projections, which sounds to me very much like, meddling scientific meddling. So Emilius comes through and he is building a different use of the energies that they've discovered. So the society is moving to become one of the greatest spiritual societies. In the Steiner work, this is the same thing as Manu, which is that title of Manu, the great spiritual leader who takes, when Atlantis is going down, takes all those, the top 100 people in Atlantis who are, have a certain level of spiritual development and brings them to India. But tracking with this Emilius for a moment, at a certain stage, he's challenged by a being named Esai, E-S-A-I, who is a giant. And this gets into some, again, we're looking at some morphology going on here because he's altered. He's a giant. And he is the leader of the Belial forces. And they split the understanding, scientific understanding that the Atlanteans have. They take that spiritual information and they make it societies. Christians are now using different, what Casey called firestones, two-eye crystals. And they are, you know, on the Emilius side, they're using these, they're training these temple priestesses to interact directly with these beings from the outer spheres, the spiritual, the saint realm, in fact. So that's how they're using it. So pop open your laptop and you're dealing with, you know, the higher realms of the saints. In Belial's case, the Belials are figuring out, I can use this as a laser, and I can lay waste this group over here. It's giving us a hard time. I can take over their land. I can make them worship at the altar of our laser. So eventually, this is kind of what gets the upper hand and causes the destruction of Atlantis. What is the thread back there from Emilius and the Belial groups and the battle that took place there, which ultimately the Belial groups were able to get the upper hand?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, change a couple of those dynamics around slightly and you've got today. You've got yes. Our current situation. That is what is going on.
Yeah.
You know, I think what happens is that you have a kind of a class of people that seems to be initiated into this advanced technology, into maybe a lot of wisdom. And you have people using it ethically, and then you have people using it unethically. Right. And the people that use it unethically are of a degraded consciousness. And unfortunately, if you do use technologies, or if you expose yourself to too much spiritual energy before you're ready, sometimes this can actually, or certain spiritual truths before you're ready, this can actually cause certain types of insanity or certain types of degradation. I'm not sure if that's what happened in that case, but it sounds like people who really shouldn't have been around this information or forced themselves in or got into it somehow. And it's a really good example of how it's very important to observe, I would say, certain spiritual laws and spiritual ethics around certain types of teachings, around certain types of technologies, because Atlantis is a good example of what happens when people who are degenerate and immoral get their hands on incredibly high technology that they themselves couldn't personally channel it and build it. It was probably channeled and built and brought forward by people that had a significantly higher consciousness than them.
Yes.
It's just like in the CIA, various programs where you have these, you know, forcing psychics to do various readings and get information. You know, the people that force these programs, they don't have the ability to get the information themselves, you know? So it's just a series of exploitation that we're still caught in, you know?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, actually, that Atlantis wave, you could say the CIA and those programs and the way that they use those programs is kind of a 21st century reflection of that really early period. Let's talk about some of those people. So for example, well, let's talk about the principle first. In remote viewing, you get a series of coordinates, but they have to recruit people in order to read them. And so they get a bunch of people in there and they're like, oh, not so great, not so great, not so great. Whoa, this guy is completely off the charts. Let's use him. We've heard about this, you know, young recruit over here, 19 years old, developing consciousness. Let's bring her in. You know, and so they start to assemble these teams. Later, they'll actually create camps for young people to identify these people. And it reminds me very much when we've done shows and work around the Orphic Circle, they would cast a wide net to find not young geniuses, but young psychic geniuses.
Yes. So there is a higher version of this, which is that, you know, psychics should work with people that can take that material and do good in the world with it. A psychic can't do all of that themselves. So there is a reality where this is necessary and this is needed and this is actually very good. But then that can be taken and that can be distorted, which is exactly what we see, which is people obsessively trying to break the code, which is doing mass recruitment of children and trying to harvest their abilities. There's so many different stories like this, and just exploit them to get whatever little tidbits of secrets or whatever they can from them. And there's probably a lot more that goes on. They probably have things that they look for. Like you said, they target certain people. Right. And a lot of the people, as you know, we found with the very stuff that we've looked into, a lot of these people are really seriously damaged. After these programs, they can't live a normal life. Nobody believes that they've been part of this. And they have sometimes a lot of spiritual attachments connected to them because they've been forced into these states and forced to connect with these demonic entities. And now they've got all this these attachments onto them, you know? So it's very damaging, you know? And it's a kind of something that, you know, very hidden, but really needs to come forward.
Oh, that is fascinating. You know, it reminds me of those strange, strange stories of the Montauk experiments and the psychic chairs and all these types of experiments they were doing in the 90s, actually. And I've always felt that there was some validity to the Montauk experiments. It seemed like there was enough of a trail there. But let's look at the remote viewing program. Russell Targ, who's the physicist who ran it, he's been on this program multiple times, and he's given me a great insight to it, and his books are out there. I think he shared widely with it. He was not a great fan of the CIA who sponsored the research, but he went along with it in order to get the money to continue to do the research. What I find interesting is in that program, they worked with Uri Geller. Yeah. In the early 70s. Uri Geller, you know, he's kind of the celebrity psychic, of course, but he's got that long track record now. And he's still out there doing it. I mean, this was some 50 years ago. And he's the Israeli psychic, the spoonbender and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that Targ told me in relation to Geller is that he actually was very psychic and his remote viewing track record was quite phenomenal. But he also regarded him as kind of a magician and so therefore given to showmanship and things that were outside the realm of legitimate, you know, psychic experiments. So he was sort of a mixed bag. The person who brought him forward and the emphasis on Uri Geller and aliens in the 70s and 80s in particular, he still talks about them. He recently talked about how he had a piece of a UFO that John Lennon had given.
That's crazy.
Because you know, Lennon classically had a UFO sighting. So Geller is interesting out there, and his sponsor, Perharich, is somebody maybe worth you know, when you're talking about these groups trying to reincarnate the Mars thing and sort of get us into this hybrid piece and to train psychics at an early age in order to get the information from them, like the Orphic Circle, Paharich is somebody who really comes to mind because he comes out of nowhere. You know, he's a psychologist and he brings forward research on psychedelic mushrooms, for example, psychic ability. But his earliest association, Gigi, is with a group called the Nine, which we've touched on a few times. And it sits out there as part of the kind of mythology of contact with ETs. But it's a weird one because it has all this Egyptian mysticism attached to it.
Yes, the Nine are, I feel like, another hidden secret.
Yes.
They're incredibly well connected into programs that you wouldn't think. Like if you just go down to Sedona and you're like, ooh, I'm going to go to a channeling meetup. You're going to see a bunch of like wine moms hanging out and like doing various things or like hippity dippity doos most of the times, like, you know, doing bless them. I'm there too. So, hey. But then, but when you get like, you know, but when you look at the Nine, what we're looking at is a systematic, in-depth, scientific, massive channeling circle that involved aspects of, so well connected, involved aspects of aerospace, NASA, all this crazy stuff, CIA, MKUltra. It's so deep. And when I tuned into it, when we were going to do this, the first thing that I felt from the energy was that, like, whoa, this isn't human. This isn't a person. This is what it felt like to me, was some kind of AI synthetic supercomputer that was beaming information down to people. And it kind of took me aback because I'd never really considered if that was possible.
Right.
You know, how is it possible that there could be some type of, I don't know, is it a satellite in space? Is it, you know, what is it? You know, how does it work? I don't know. But what it was something that was beaming down information. And psychics would pick it up, or they wanted people to pick up this frequency, but it was basically somehow able to gather up everybody's thoughts and all of the different thoughts and teachings and all of the information that was basically in our planet. Sort of like the maybe Akashic records of the third dimension. Not a very vast array, certainly not organic information or new information or truly inspired information, but like information that had been around for a certain period of time and had saturated the lower planes, they could pick that up. And what they would do was regurgitate it to people to get them to basically align and connect with this synthetic AI supercomputer that is basically acting like some kind of psychic force. And a lot of, I realized this is also in the New Age a lot, where you'll hear certain channelers and they'll give you scientific information, they'll give you, you know, information from the Eastern traditions or some of the Western traditions, and it's like, oh my god, this person just knows everything, they're just, wow, amazing. But if you really, really, really listen, there's a coldness to it, and it's not loving. It's not warm. It's icy.
Right.
It's just like a data stream. And they'll say things like love. They'll say things like, you know, you must care for one another, or things that the Buddha would say, or things that Christ would say, or things that the great mystics have said. They'll say that, but behind it, there's a coldness. And it's like a computer. And I've seen this in the New Age, and there's no heart energy. And this is what I think we have to be careful about. And this is what I saw coming out, like basically what they were trying to communicate with.
Interesting. This group, well, some of the very richest people in America took part in it and set it up. Ruth Forbes was a big member of it, the DuPont family, who were known even back to the 19th century for doing science fiction, you know. Okay. So they have that lock-in, which suggests to me that even though we know the nine from when they start in the late 40s and they go on, including a version in the 80s that Gene Roddenberry starts showing up for and channeling. So, you know, it goes on in the lineage. God knows where it is right now, you know. But when I look at it, I think to myself, these groups were involved in some unusual people with unusual connections. For example, Forbes, she was married to Arthur Young, who created the helicopter and sold it to Bell Helicopter. But Young ended up being a phenomenal, you know, consciousness seeker, and his institute is still here in Boston, which he and his wife put together, which is all about consciousness. It's not about military helicopters or anything. So some of these people, I guess, get out and they go on this other track and they're like, you know, I'm not doing it for these other purposes anymore. But then people like Paharaj continue to work inside that CIA system, and they're trying to, you know, Hal Puthoff is kind of another one. I think of Targ and Puthoff as two totally different sides of this, where Targ kind of went for this, what's the spiritual ramifications of all this psychic information? And Puthoff went in and said, how can I get this to be a CIA military program? You know, and so there's mentalities that are different there. They're both working with the same information, and even some of the personnel crisscross. And of course, you know, Puthoff showed up during the whole shenanigans with Elizondo and the TTSA as well. So he's still, yeah, even in the 70s, still pushing that envelope. Gigi, when you look at that, you see that then these channeling groups can get together, and whether it's the nine or another group, they can be interacting with them. But depending on their purposes for putting it together in the first place, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yes, you really don't know what you're going to get, and it really is a big mystery. And when you look into Puharik, it really looked like he was becoming obsessed, almost like a mad scientist, with finding people who could, you know, connect with the nine. It's almost like he was becoming possessed. Yes. And yeah, he became obsessed with trying to find the specific channels that could connect with that wavelength. And lots of people went in and out of his programs, like you said. Lots of people went in and out of those programs. One connected to the TTSA. And we don't know whether or not there were other smaller programs started. This is just a branch of it.
No question. John Alexander, you know, the big kind of deep state military guy who deals with UFOs, he's incorporated all kinds of paranormal studies for the military, including voodoo and things of that nature. So it's a heavy thread going on there, no question about it. But when you look at it, and I'll jump to a few of the specifics about the nine. One of the things that they claimed to be when they were interacting with this Indian doctor and Forbes and all these other people who had assembled, they claimed to be Osiris and Isis and these Egyptian gods, but they were hanging out this time in a spaceship outside of Earth. Now, the information, there's no doubt that the information is very sophisticated, as is the contact. So it's not just like this Indian was making up this story. He was in contact with something for sure. What is it about a group like that, the Nine, the Council of Nine, these aliens who identify themselves as such, why do they take on the guise of Osiris, for example? What would be the point?
Yeah, so I think that is to claim authority, to take an authoritative position. If you just say, hey, I'm Osiris, hey, I'm Isis, hey, I'm Edgar Cayce, hey, I'm this person, I'm that person, you're basically stealing or plagiarizing a lineage.
Right.
And you then don't have to prove yourself, because you're saying, well, I'm Ra, or hey, like I'm Isis, or hey, I'm Osiris. If you just say that you are that, And then you impress people, you glamorize people with these scientific equations and all this information that you basically just stole from humanity. You know, people will then believe that, you know, that's what you are. And so I think it's to steal a false sense of authority, but also to probably jostle humanity's like deep subconscious mind and place themselves in humanity's or in these people's subconscious mind, because we all have a place in our subconscious mind where there is the divine masculine, there is the divine feminine, Isis and Osiris, and these are archetypes that we work with. And by placing themselves in that position, it gives them a certain power over people's minds. And this is why a lot of charlatans will say, oh, I'm the incarnation of so-and-so. That's because, maybe not all the time, but that's because it's garnering favor and it's getting people to trust you and let down their guard without actually having to do any work. So that's one of the things that I always look for in somebody is, are they trying to claim that they're like Mary Magdalene or Jesus or some great mystic that worked their whole life to achieve something, and then, you know, someone just comes along and takes it. It's the same kind of thing with fraudulent entities or fraudulent mystics.
Someone rolls along and wants their own show on Gaia TV and boom.
Right.
So the Osiris thing, then, it's almost like alien imposters. It's like the ultimate space LARP, in a sense. They are, in fact, interdimensional entities. They're space entities of some kind, but they're pretending to be these past Egyptian gods that achieved all these great things for humanity. And so, as a result, because I'm impersonating this, you need to pay attention to me immediately.
Exactly. And if we wanted to go one step further, there are really two different types of interdimensionals. There are interdimensionals that are basically organic, and they are basically what you would see as future humans or higher humans or higher dimensional humans that are basically connected to the earth as the higher aspect of the earth. And they're the traditional angels and masters and spiritual beings, and they don't have any kind of mutation. You literally fall in density with the seeds of everything you need to ascend or to become a master, and you rise with those seeds. You don't splice your DNA, you don't mutate yourself, and you don't take any chips or modifications. That's not. The moment that you do that, you become something that's a divergent being. You become artificial. And your body will begin to sort of shut down.
Interesting.
And so what ends up happening is, over long periods of the Earth's evolution, and if you realize, you know, that time is not really, in a sense, real, and time can be traveled, what happens is you have all of these interdimensional beings that are, what they really are is mutated. They've mutated themselves in some way, or they've been mutated in some way beyond any type of healing at this point. And the common denominator is that they want to come back to this particular time before we have chosen transhumanism, or before our bodies are horribly mutilated. We're developed enough to have mind developed. You know, in the post-Atlantean epoch, we have this beautiful mind, this beautiful sense of individuality and sovereignty that we can just fly with now. So it's like the Goldilocks zone where we are. So there's a great deal of these interdimensionals, which you could really kind of see as some of them would be like deformed humans, really. They're coming back and they want our genetics, because they've gotten out of the evolutionary chain. And every time they incarnate, they get sicker and sicker, and they get closer and closer to basically going into the abyss or the eighth sphere. And when you do that, you lose your individuality and kind of have to start all over again, which is, right. You know, Casey would say Saturn would reamalgamate you, and you got to start at the very beginning, right?
Yes.
So it's all these beings that are avoiding that. And we're at an end times, and so there's these massive programs that we see about genetic, wanting to gather people's genetics, and even various things going on in our society right now with mRNA and all that kind of stuff. We have to begin to think bigger. And we have to begin to understand that there are these divergent beings. The ones that are the most aggressive that we should really focus on are divergent humans. They're literally like a failed version of ourselves, if you will. They usually look like something like the Greys. And they're actually looking to hybridize themselves. There's the hybridize thing again, back into the evolutionary chain, or what my guides call a rope of consciousness, which is the natural evolutionary cycle. They want to get back in there. And so this is, you know, there's various different ways. I mean, part of that is convincing people that they're godlike, right? And so when I see something like the Nine trying to dig its heels in and things like that, and that it's an AI thing. And even with the Nine, you know, Yuri Geller said that he was communicating with Spectra, which was this ship or this panel in a UFO or this supercomputer. He even admitted that he was basically communicating with a supercomputer that he called Spectra. Freaked him out. He apparently never went back. It's not natural. It's not natural, you know? So we have to understand that there is this synthetic, there's synthetic humanoid beings that want to be reintegrated into society because they've destroyed themselves. And they're simultaneously introducing that path of destruction to us because that's how they bind back in.
Oh, that's really interesting because, they're harvesting human DNA. So if you look, if we go through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there's a massive amount of abduction stories. Not played up so much now, but in that period, you know, light shows up as a saucer, somebody has missing time. When they remember it through hypnotic regression, you know, they were examined. There were all these sexual things that they were examined for. We had all the stories in the 90s about women and hybrid alien babies, and some of them were just absolutely convinced, you know, that I have a whole hybrid family and I've seen these half aliens, half humans. Is that part of this? Is that story distorted, or is that what we were hearing about? Is that what we were getting?
That's
part of the story.
Yeah, that is the story. Actually, if you look at the most common abduction cases by far are with various different kinds of Greys. So perhaps these beings have been playing so much with their own genetics that there's so many, there's like blue ones, there's small ones, there's big ones, there's ones with noses, there's, you know, all different types of Greys.
Yeah.
But they're the most, even when you look at like in the New Age circles, all the different types of ETs, they look like some form of Grey, usually. And then you've got, but then you've got these outliers that are kind of a little, maybe we could look at those another day, but most of the abductees or the, you know, the people that are getting messed around with are getting messed around with Greys. And they usually will talk about having their eggs taken, sperm taken. Sometimes they're even brought onto a ship where they're meant to like bond with this alien child. Most of the abduction cases have various different types of either taking genetics from people or direct reproductive stuff, and that's because they are essentially trying to heal their DNA that they damaged through mutations, chimeric stuff, like merging their genetics with like a lizard or whatever it would be. The stuff, the kind of Atlantean stuff. Like if you took the Atlantean stuff and you just added, you know, 20,000 years to it, you get you know, you start getting these mutated humans that are now outside of the evolutionary chain and, you know, dying to get back. And by Atlantean stuff, I mean the Atlanteans were making chimeras. They were merging, they were creating these androids, you know, things like that. And now we are seeing, you know, so that's what's going on there.
That's the outgrowth of that original experiment, which worked so poorly back in the Atlantean times too, and actually produced monstrosities, as we know, with their projection technology, may have even produced dinosaurs from some of those stories.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Or reproduced them.
Yeah, they were doing all kinds of stuff. And when you do that kind of stuff, it has a cosmic, there's a cosmic repercussion. It opens certain doors. It opens certain portals. It allows certain things. When you mess with DNA, you're messing with portals.
Right.
You know, you're starting to pull things in and you're starting to, it's a form of high magic, really, to mess with DNA, because it actually messes with certain portal systems in the cosmos, bringing things in. And so
laws of nature.
Yeah, you are. So we have to think like, okay, well, if people were doing this, and if also the Nazis were doing this, and if certain American projects were doing this, what would happen if this just proliferated for like 10,000 years or even less? What would they look like? And what if they had spacefaring ability? You know, so then we're sort of getting in the ball game of what these visitors are. And some people will say with the Zetas or with the Greys, like they're not from here. Okay, well then why do they want our genetics so badly if they're not from here? Why is everything that they do a massive genetic program and their sole thing to be, you know, hybridization? If they were some other creature, even a cousin, it wouldn't even, you know, if there was some other being from some other system entirely, that it wouldn't be about hybridization. It wouldn't really even be possible.
That's really interesting. You know, this is a great question because we're naturally trained to think of them as just off-world civilizations visiting, doing their thing and leaving and using us as a kind of port. Mac Tawney's book, and Tawney's was one of those really off the wall UFO researchers because he didn't go for the traditional theory on this. He thought that the Greys and these aliens were here, and he thought they were just a little bit ahead of us as far as science was concerned, and that they were able with that slight advancement to keep their presence hidden, except when they did things like abductions or flew over cities or whatever. So he called them crypto-terrestrials.
Ah, I think that's starting to get to a lot closer
yes.
to what we're dealing with. I feel like they also will create bases on the more denser spheres in our solar system. They don't have any hold over the Earth. So the beings that control the Earth are the higher humanoids. They're basically us in the future. You know, they are just Earth in a higher dimension. And so they're actually the beings, some people may call them Pleiadians or Venusians. These are actually the beings, they're really aspects of ourselves, but they're the ones that control the planet. Not control in a negative way, not in a forceful way, but they're the ones that have the most influence, and they help to, you know, protect have a protective sphere and make sure that certain cosmic laws are adhered to. And so things don't go crazy so that, you know, negative entities and stuff don't just take over the world. And they do this by following a very strict protocol that doesn't just allow humanity to experience no pain. Because I can hear people being like, well, have them come in here and just clear out the political system and have them come in here and this or that. No. A certain amount of pressure is needed for humanity to grow that has to do with the exact degree of karma that humanity has and all these different things. It's a very complex system, but there are higher beings. Maybe we would have called them angels in the past. that do make sure that the system is adhered to. So that those are the beings that really have the most influence, if you will. These darker beings, they're like freeloaders that are just looking to make as much connection with humanity, whether it be through New Age channeling circles, like the Nine or whatever it is. The more people that believe in them, the more people that think that they're Osiris, the more people that think that they're this godlike being or this teacher, the more access these darker entities have, and there's nothing that lighter entities can do about it. Because through your free will choice, you're choosing to connect with the Nine, or you're choosing to connect with these lower beings, and through cosmic law, your free choice is your free will to align with that and go in that direction. And there's nothing a genuine higher being will do to, they're not going to interfere with your free will. So we have this situation going on because humanity keeps renewing the contracts of Atlantis, basically, you know, they keep coming here, trying to bind themselves with their, they always do that. Even in the earlier days, when you hear like the Anunnaki, when they looked more human, they're always trying to take humanity's genetics and bind themselves with it so they can stay here.
Right.
It's not like to give you more exalted powers or to create you or to take a monkey and take themselves and they created you. That is so this group who literally has no evolutionary future can bind themselves to this planet.
Right.
And stay here by merging with certain people's DNA, and that allows them to continue to stay here. And they have all these things where they love to merge themselves with people's DNA that allows them to stay.
Interesting. Well, how much of that then that we're seeing in culture that relates to artificial intelligence controlling things, how much does this hybrid kind of broken down line, twisted line, hovering around humanity relate to that? Is it trying to embody them almost like a cyborg, in taking on some human aspects, some mechanical aspects, and sustaining itself as to inhabit basically a kind of immortal body?
It is. It really is. It's always a perversion of something that's holy. So the natural phase of evolution now is to rise. It is for us to remember who we are, become sovereign, and redevelop our gifts, get our clairvoyance back, get our clairaudience back, and kind of reconnect to the cosmos as holy individuals. And that's kind of like a hive mind. Not a hive mind where you lose your sovereignty, but you almost move like starlings, where everybody has this level of interconnectivity because of their intuition, because of their psychic ability. And you can begin to heal your body and you start to move into the higher phases similar to Atlantis, but with this sovereignty to us. So we're moving towards this higher phase of human evolution. And there are these beings or these fallen angels or these lower beings that still crave that. They still crave that feeling of being connected to the all, of having these powers, of being invincible, of maybe transcending death. They still have all of those urges. That is the human being's destiny, right? They still have that desire, but they cannot do it with their consciousness because they're so degenerate. And so the desire is still there, but they're so degenerate that they can't do it. So what they do is they try to do it externally through, oh, well, I'll just add this like chip to my brain and like, I'll just like tap into like Wikipedia. Like that's the same, right? Or like, you know what I mean? Or just like, I'll just merge basically with machines. I'll just go the transhumanism route and that will allow me to live forever. Well, that's not the same thing as like Christ being resurrected at the cross, my friends.
Right.
That's not living. That's not transcending death. That's not being
a superficial expression of the same type of idea. It's like the total shortcut.
Total shortcut in the vein of materialism. So, if you were to just take a psychic shortcut and make it completely materialist, that's what you would get. It's everything that the transhumanist agenda does. is a mockery of things we can already do if we develop. Akashic records are the cosmic mind. You can train yourself to do that. And it'll actually be a multidimensional experience, not some weird 3D supercomputer that is controlled by someone that you don't even like, or someone who's a pervert or something.
Right.
So it's, so everything is a mockery of, and then on top of that, as you know, and that you've taught on your channel, so much, is that there's this whole Ahriman aspect, which is like there's an AI God.
Right.
That convinces people that this is the way, and that, there's that whole aspect. There's a religious aspect to this that creeps in that tells people, oh yes, you're going to, live, this is the next step of human evolution, and this is the way that it is. And so you've got this whole spiritual element to it, that's just completely, right. Just woo.
Right, wear that Apple Watch, and eventually it becomes part of your pulse.
Wow, amazing!
And it'll make your pulse actually vibrate the correct way. Now, forget about nature.
Yeah, and the sad thing is like there are people with Parkinson's or with certain diseases that you know where I'm going.
Yes.
That will be told, we can cure your disease. And this is somebody who probably hasn't been able to take a bite of food properly in, 10 years. And they're like, here, well, you can just use this or that. And then they can walk and they can, do things. And so this is going to be very glamorous and very hypnotic. And so it's not just like, ew, gross, I don't want to be hooked up to Neuralink. It's actually going to look very amazing.
Attractive. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, this is the next stage in human evolution. Right. You're half machine, but you're so much better, and you live to 150 years. And
yes. And then it's like, by doing that, though, we got to keep it in balance, because our bodies are always giving us feedback about how close we are to our own soul and about our evolution. So it's like, we don't really want to remove all of our ailments necessarily. We want them to communicate with us. And so it's kind of weakening humanity in a way. So
it's really interesting. I want to pick up on something you said about Ahriman there, because he's such a crucial piece in all this. And why Steiner's work is so, I think, relevant. He's got the incredible background, he certainly is able to do a kind of a cognitive piece on the past, looking at the Akashic record. But what he does is he flash forwards Gigi into this century, and he says, here's the incarnation of Ahriman, it comes through the technology. That's a piece that we didn't get from Theosophy or the other mystery traditions. It was really something where he was like, oh, I see it very specifically. And he gave it this name of the Persian god of evil,
yeah.
Ahriman, Ahriman. Now, Ahriman, at a certain point, he starts to identify Ahriman, who is the traditional devil, really, whereas he puts Lucifer in this other category of Lucifer Gnosis, where sometimes humanity gets knowledge from Lucifer Gnosis, at other times these Luciferian beings try to draw them from Earth with their thoughts and their imagination. So they are also kind of harvesting them, but there's a different type of relationship. The Ahrimanic relationship is quite different. It completely pulls down the human being into nothingness. And it's an old force that sort of insinuated itself into the evolution of the Earth. And there's no getting around it. There's no fleeing Ahriman. In Steiner's cosmology, it's facing Ahriman. But Ahriman's coming in, Gigi, he says, through the technology. And what he's bringing is a sense of that science, the materialistic science, through technology, which cuts off the individual from their own spirituality. That's the period we're in now, according to Steiner. How do you see it?
I just think the fact that he saw it is pretty crazy. The thing that you said about Ahriman almost being like this held back element that kind of represented humanity.
Yes.
And is kind of projecting himself here. That's exactly what we were saying, these interdimensionals are.
Yes.
They're just forces that were held back, that left the evolutionary chain, and they now represent this shadow of humanity. And then humanity interacts with these forces. They can't avoid it, right? You can't avoid them. You can't avoid Ahriman, because fundamentally, Ahriman represents an aspect of ourselves.
Right.
Ahriman is like an initiation. So it's I love the idea of really coming to understand that there are these aspects of our own self or of humanity, whether it be like kind of like a demiurge like Ahriman or these interdimensional beings, they didn't pass an initiation almost. Like they got held back for some reason and they're reinserting themselves into the evolutionary plane to live parasitically off of us.
That's it.
Yes, and the technology thing is massive. His ability, Steiner's ability to predict that and then contrast Ahriman with Lucifer, having Lucifer be the imbalanced kind of depersonalization aspect, and then
right.
having Ahriman be the overly material aspect was really brilliant.
Yes, unusual, very unique in any mystery work.
Totally.
Which says that sometimes when you read that material, you think to yourself, this could have been written yesterday.
Yes.
You know, it could have been written today. It's so relevant to how we are gearing up to kind of invest ourselves and become trapped in that technological reality without, you know, and it's interesting because a lot of people would say, well, you know, I could be a Luddite and that way I could escape it if I lived like the Amish or something, you know, and I'm glad they're able to have that experience. Unfortunately, it's not really about that, though. It's more about being able to take on the challenge of the technology and face those aspects and acquire them without losing yourself to that realm where they come from. Is
yeah.
that accurate?
It's right. Yeah, exactly. It's about harmony. We're not meant to stay in the same phase of existence forever. You know, where we're churning, I mean, and just in my opinion, like, you know, where we're doing everything at a very basic level. We're meant to evolve and become more and more sophisticated and work more and more, I think, closer with the earth and closer with nature, and harmonize with the different kingdoms, if you will, the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom, and be creative and express ourselves and evolve ourselves. We're meant to do that, but we have to earn that evolution by being exposed to the absolute worst potential of it, which is what Ahriman is serving us. But we have to earn it. Like, we have to be engaged and we have to be on computers. We have to see how addictive they are and how, and we have to choose to have technology in our life in a disciplined, productive way. And we have to see how dangerous it can be with, you know, things like entrainment and all that kind of stuff. So we have to walk that tightrope.
Entrainment, yes. And it is ugly. I mean, we can already see the ugly aspects with the brainwashing capability, the ugly aspects of people getting overly involved and addicted to technology and forgetting their own personhood. So this is a very difficult stage, I would say. Steiner, in his work on Ahriman, where he emphasizes that if Ahriman comes upon humanity unawares, if they're in a kind of sleepy consciousness, then it's incredibly dangerous for their evolutionary track. So this unawares thing, I think, is interesting, and I wanted you to kind of open that up a little bit. The danger is not so much in facing the Ahrimanic reality, but in facing it in this sleepy, unaware, low, you know, kind of low attention span way and with low awareness. So the key would be to be ultimately aware of the coming in of Ahriman and to be able to relate on the technology side while saying, I'm not going to get sucked into this virtual reality sphere.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's what I would say. I think that, well, that was weird. There was just like a weird bang on my window.
Oh, yes.
But
Saruman's at the door now. Is it gone?
it's gone. It's really weird. Did you hear it?
There was something weird there. Yes.
Weird. So that's the whole thing, is that our consciousness is such that we can either occupy it and be present and command it and build, or we can kind of zone out, and we can leave ourselves, we can kind of leave our consciousness like an empty chair. And if you leave your consciousness like an empty chair, then something else can sit in it and you can sort of be lured away. So there's this concept that we should be very, very, very alert and focused and be very purposeful in what we do. If you're washing the dishes, take your time and really wash the dishes and really focus on what you're doing. Don't think about the conversation that you have to have with someone or the person that made you angry or whatever it is. Just really wash the dishes. If you're talking to someone, really talk to someone and really be present in everything that you're doing. If you're using your computer, use it in a way where you go on there to do something. You have a disciplined time when you're on social media, and really have that willpower, and that allows you to really occupy yourself. But when you're out there kind of like floating and you're like, undisciplined, what happens is that you can actually kind of esoterically or spiritually kind of leave yourself unoccupied, and that's when things can come in. So I think that it's about alertness.
Wow, absolutely. Oh, and I want to also mention to people that they can go to ggyoung.com to take part in the classes that you set up, which go all the whole range from very beginning stuff to very advanced classes.
Yep, we do that. I have Intermystic, which is just for beginner. It's just creating a common language and developing the Claire's understanding what that is. And then I have a psychic protection course, and then I have a kind of more advanced course. And then I also do, for members, I do two live Q&As a month where you can ask anything. So if you're taking the courses, you can ask any questions that you have. There's forums that discuss intuition development and all different kinds of things. That's basically what's going on.
Fantastic. Incredible. Just amazing information and gifted insight, Gigi. Now we have more to dive deep into, including altered DNA and bridge entities. So we'll cover that and get it out for everyone shortly. Now remember to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. We'll be back with the X series next week and more Gigi Young coming up live along with other exciting guests for you. See you soon.